Well, now it's absolutely my honor to present our speaker for the day, Reverend Jennifer Dalton. Reverend Dalton was born and raised in the mountains of Virginia. Spiritually, she was raised Mormon and Southern Baptist. She spent 4 years as an aircraft technician in the United States Air Force before completing her bachelor's degree in political science, and many, many years later, her Master of Divinity degree from Emory's Candler School of Theology. She is currently ordained and recognized by the Alliance of Baptists and considers herself a Unitarian Universalist Baptist. I think I have these numbers right. I'm not sure if Casey did them, but if not, I'm a year ahead. She's been married for 19 years, raising three children, ages 23, 19, and 17. They all live with three dogs, and the number of cats has gone up from three to many. I understand that. I'm working on another one myself. You didn't hear that. Jennifer is currently working at Atlanta Medical Center as a patient advocate. This morning, Reverend Dalton's sermon is entitled, The Mystery of Love. While we talk about love all the time, in a thousand different ways, do we really know what love is? And is it a force in our lives or simply human sentimentality? Reverend Dalton.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We'll start today with a reading, and it's actually from the letters of Paul to the Corinthians. It's chapter 13, verses 4 through 13. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part. But when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked as a child. I thought as a child. I reasoned as a child. When I became a man, I put away the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only a reflection as in a mirror, and then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, and then I shall know fully, as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. The author Terry, okay, I have to move this, guys. Sorry. There we go. The author Terry Pratchett, in his book, The Hogfather, writes, take the universe and grind it down to the finest powder, sieve it through the finest sieve, and then show me one atom of justice, one molecule of mercy. And yet you act as though there is some ideal order in the world, as if there were some rightness in the universe by which it may be judged. Indeed, grind the universe down, find me one atom of justice, one molecule of mercy, and while we are sifting, I would add, find me one atomic particle of this thing we call love. Logically, we can explain biological love. We can break down the process into the biological and chemical processes for the purpose of mating. But there's very little explanation for long-term mating once the children are reared. And there is less explanation for sappy poetry, bad love songs, and the delivering of dead flora and concoctions of chocolate. Nothing chemical actually explains for me how absolutely blind and stupid the most brilliant of us can become when we are hit by this thing we've chosen to call love. I know I sound cynical when I talk about traditional human courting rituals. I will admit I have little patience for human courting rituals or the use of the word love. I'm a cynic. I don't swoon for love songs. I don't faint away at sweet poetry. It's taken me 21 years of living with my husband to remember our anniversary. I fail miserably at traditional romance. I hear sweet words, and rather than soften, my heart grows suspicious and seeks ulterior motives. In my defense, I didn't grow up in a manner that would lead one to believe in words of love or kindness. The home I was raised in was horribly abusive. I learned very early in my life that the same person who said, "I love you," was the person who could and would hurt you the most. The most important lesson I learned in that home was that words are just that, words. Words fall empty in the face of actions that scream the opposite. Perhaps it was that very experience, the experience of growing up with the words of love, but actions that were the opposite, that left me obsessed with the idea of love. Romantic love, platonic love. By the time I was in my teens, I was obsessed by all of the things we call love. The first time the obsession hit, I was all of 15. I don't remember how it started. I just remember looking at him one day. And I realized that his work had shaped my entire life. That without his work, I wouldn't have my friends, my education, or my favorite teachers. In addition to being abusive, my family was and is racist. My earliest memories of race were of saying the word nigger in kindergarten, and my mother informing me that it was a very bad word. And I informed her that I didn't know that because she and Dad used it all the time. I was 4. Later, in the first grade, I remember being given a list of classmates so that we could exchange Valentine's Day cards. And my mom sat me down at the dining room table, and we went down the list with each child asking me to tell her whether the kids were black or white. And she would mark them with a letter, but that way we would know to give appropriate cards to each group. But as hard as my parents tried to indoctrinate me, school was in many ways my salvation. My friends on the school bus were black. Many of my classmates were black. And while in the mountains of Virginia, they do not in fact teach the intricacies of the civil rights movement, every year we had Black History Month. And every year we learned about Martin Luther King Jr. And what we learned was that he preached love in the face of hate. We learned that he was brave enough to stand for nonviolence in the face of brutality. We learned that in the name of the love he preached, he was murdered and taken away from his family and his children. I became obsessed. I was obsessed with his work and his writings. And I won a particularly brutal argument with my father and got to hang a poster of Reverend King in my bedroom, right beside the posters of heavy metal bands and movie stars. I needed to understand what could motivate a man to give his life for so many others, so selflessly. I understood that his life and his death had changed my life, but I could not understand his commitment to others or the depth of love he must have felt for his God and for his fellow humans, that he would sacrifice himself. And I couldn't fathom that kind of love But I knew it was possible. Because his life and his death and his works showed me that it was possible. Even then, I didn't know what love was. I wanted love to be this thing I could touch or point to and say that. That's love. But the truth is, you can still grind the universe down into the smallest pieces and run them through the finest sieve and not find one atomic particle of this thing we call love. And the truth is, my instinct is right when it tells me not to trust poems and songs, no matter how well-intended they may be. Words are just that. Words describe the thing, but words are not the thing. Depending on the source you read, the Greeks had 4 different words that mean love, at least 8 different types of love described in their works. Over the centuries, millions of words have been spent describing this thing that we call love. But none of those words is actually love. In my mind, love is a force. And much like the force of gravity, we can't see it, we can't touch it. We only really know it by its effects. We only see it and know it because of the actions of the people who experience it. Which means effectively that the word love is just another word. Simply empty sentimentality without the actions that prove the force is emotion. While I cannot point to an atomic particle and say, here is this thing you call love, I can point to men and women like Martin Luther King Jr. and Harriet Tubman, and I can say to you that this is love. People can speak to me about love of country, but I can stand in Arlington Cemetery and see the waves of stones of men and women who love their country and love their comrades in arms and gave their lives in the name of that love. You can speak to me about love of neighbor, but I can see your works and your actions in the local community. I can hear the words, but the words are meaningless. I only know that this thing we call love exists when I am able to see the way the force changes lives. The way that love can move us from being basically selfish, clannish, self-sustaining little creatures, and brings us into community, willing to live our lives for one another. The UU sources state that we draw on Christian and Hebrew texts that call upon us to love our neighbor as ourselves. The UU website reads, Unitarian Universalists affirm unconditional, universal love as a foundation and grounding for our actions in the world. We strive to be of service to our communities and advocate for change on local, state, national, and international levels. Through our Side with Love campaign, we amplify the voices of the oppressed through online media. We show up in partnership at justice events across the country. We lobby national leaders on immigration reform, racial justice, equality for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people, religious freedom, and more. And above all, we work to make love real in the world. We work to make love real in the world. Grind the universe down and find me an atom of justice, one molecule of mercy. And while we sift, I would add, find me a particle of this thing we call love. And you can't. You can't prove to me that love exists outside of biochemical reactions and the driving force to mate. There is no atomic particle, no grain of existence. Love is, in its most base state, a chemical reaction that drives us to create more humans and deprives us of common sense in the process. It is, in fact, a sappy sentiment driven to market cards, chocolate, and flowers at least one day out of the year. And hate is similar. Just a sentiment of extreme dislike. But I grew up knowing that hatred was real because I saw the fruits. I heard the racist sentiments, the homophobic rantings. I saw how hate had shaped my home and in many ways my town and county. I grew up knowing about white and black funeral homes and being told I couldn't sit with black boys on the school bus. I saw the fruits of hatred, and I could tell you that it was very much real. And I grew up knowing that just like my family, there were a lot of others who could show up to church every Sunday and talk about love of God and love a neighbor, but had no problem hating their black neighbor or their gay neighbor every day. And it didn't take me long to conclude that the actions of hate were a lot louder than any of the hymns they sung on Sunday morning about loving God. Through the works of great leaders and great school teachers, God bless school teachers, I was able to learn that love was real too, in the same way. I believed hate was real because I saw it lived out. The truly good people showed me that love could be real too, because love existed when they lived it out. We know it's real when we see it lived out. Cards, flowers, poems, songs don't make it real. Great books of holy scriptures and even long-winded sermons don't make love real. Our very best intentions don't make love more than a sentiment. But the UUA was really clear. The UUA did not say we share our very best intentions in the world. The UUA statement reads that we work to make love real in the world. Now, my favorite joke about UUs is that if we all died and went to heaven, and there were two signs, and one read heaven this way, and the other one read discussion about heaven that way, you'd find all of us in the discussion room. It's a good joke. And it's a good joke because there's a grain of truth in it. We tend to be head people. We tend towards discussion prior to action. Much discussion. But if there were ever a time for action, the political rhetoric that fills our airwaves grows more and more hateful by the day. Alabama just passed an abortion law that would not only prevent a 12-year-old child who was raped from seeking an abortion, but would label her a criminal. Children are being detained in cages at our borders. Young black men are dying almost daily for the crime of being black. Mass shootings have started to occur so often that they cease to even be shocking to most of the United States population. Our world offers us so much evidence that hatred is more than just a sentiment. The fruits of hatred surround us and remind us daily that while you may grind the universe down, and you may not find a particle of hate, it's a very real thing. And so is brokenness, and so is apathy. So the world is crying out for more than our sentiments and our good intentions. It cries out for us to stand behind our words, to do the work to make love real in the world, to leave our comfortable homes, our comfortable congregations, and go out and make that ideal, that sentiment, a reality. Take the universe down. Grind it into the finest powder. Sieve it through the finest sieve. and then show me one atom of justice, one molecule of mercy. And yet you act as though there is some ideal order in the world. There is some rightness in the universe by which it may be judged. Terry Pratchett wrote those words because his character was arguing that belief in things that can't be ground down, that we cannot see or touch, is the very essence of what makes us human. What makes us, in his words, the place where fallen angel meets rising ape. He believed the very essence of humanity was our belief in justice and mercy, and I would add love. Whatever these ideals are, they exist, and they exist when we live them. And I would ask that each one of us go out this week and find the places in the world, the cracks, the flawed places, the places that cry out for healing, and we do the work. We do the work to make mercy, justice, goodness, and love real. Amen, shalom, and blessed be.
Yes.
I'm curious, it goes way back to the beginning of your sermon. What was appropriate for a Valentine for a white person versus a Valentine card for a black person? How, do you have any idea?
I don't. No. I know that at the time I had started the family controversy. There was a huge controversy in my family. They were like screaming and yelling because my best friend on the school bus was a black boy. And so I had caused it was horrible. So it may have been making sure that it was appropriate, that it didn't say love, or I don't know, but yeah. That was the great controversy that preceded the Valentine's Day. Yes.
Any other questions relative to love? Yeah.
I'll just comment that you reminded me something that happened when I was about 7 years old. I lived in a community that was all white for the most part. And I came in from having been playing with my friends and one afternoon, and I used the word nigger. And my dad said, "Don't use that word." I said, "Why not?" He says, "People, the Negroes find it offensive, and you shouldn't do that." I said, "Okay, well, what shall I call it?" He said, "Negroes." That was a politically acceptable term at the time. I said, "Okay." So the next day, I go out, I'm playing with my friends again, and they're talking about Negroes, and I said, "Negroes." And they thought I was putting on airs. I'm better than them because I used that word. It reminded me of that.
I have a question about how you might love your family despite their lack of loving tendency toward everyone, and like how you hold space for having boundary or standing up or having difficult conversations around those things, while also like not taking it personally that they are not responsive to those things?
I do that by living in Georgia, not Virginia. Yeah, that is one way that I have found to keep a certain amount of comfort level. I think you have to find your own way, depending on the family relationships. But there's therapy. There are great books on the subject. But I would say it's something that every individual has to work out for themselves. For me, 3 to 5 states worth of distance has worked really well my entire adult life. So.
Yeah, if I put like my action of love in the is humbled when I visit my family and I'm like, why aren't I acting in this space? This is the hardest space for me to act in, obviously, is as it brings back my own patterns and triggers. But it feels like very important to still be that authentic part of myself that like was quelled in this space before. It's just, I find my heart hardening towards them, you know, because they show mm-hmm. such hate and such, or just ignorance or whatever it be. So I feel strongly that, yeah, I like to have some sort of more balance between that. But
yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.